on so many levels.
I know.
A coach.
I know. I'm eating my sandwich, and you're looking at me like I should be crying. It's really not so bad, I say, realizing that it isn't, because look where it got me, to you. You're lucky to get your heart broken. That just means you have a heart. I'm not ready to talk about Amy, about love, so I move us past anecdotes into theory. Everyone is the wrong person until you meet the right person. You rub your empty ring finger. I'm not bitter, Mary Kay. If anything, I hope they're doing great. Up in heaven or dust in the wind. I hope they found the right person. I pray for a remorseful Almighty Lord, Hari 40, and I take a big bite of my sandwich. You let the waitress know that we would like another round. Fuck yes. And you admire my healthy outlook on life. I tell you it's no big deal. So, I say, because the door to your heart is cracked now, the tequila, the details about my life, and you're finally ready for me to enter. You and Nomi, real-life Gilmore Girls. What's the story there? You let out a deep sigh. You look around the restaurant, but no one is listening to us. No one is close. I know it's not easy for you, being on a date, but you are. You know it. You begin.
I was young, but I wasn't that young, and my life... Well, I told you about my parents.
Mary Kay, Mom and dear old Dad. You smile.
Yeah.
Did your dad put up a fight when you moved up here? I smell onions, layers peeling away, revealing the truth under the truth. You tell me you didn't understand the divorce. There was no scandal, no cheating.
It was like one day my mom woke up and she didn't want her pink Cadillac anymore. She didn't want him either.
Were there signs?
I miss them, you say. Are you good about signs, reading people?
Yes. Well, who can say?
I think we all see what we want to see.
You look around again, so nervous, as if one of these people is going to text Nomi and tell her that her mother is on a date. And then you relax again.
Well, my mom sort of just announced that she was done with Mary Kay, that we were moving to Bainbridge Island, that she was craving nature.
And you don't know why she left him?
No clue, you say. It was amiable. There was no custody battle, no fight. He was so calm that he drove us to the airport. He's my dad, and he's kissing us goodbye like we were going away for the weekend. We left him all alone. My mother made me complicit. But then that's not fair to say, because it's like I said, it was all so damn amiable.
I feel for you, I really do. Jesus.
One day my mom's harping on me to use more eyeliner, and the next thing you know... We live here, and she's telling me that I don't need lipstick. I didn't ask her why we left, but then, what's scarier than your mom becoming a total stranger?
I think of where I stand with love, powerless against a woman's blind determination to make our child her own. I get it.
And then, after all that, my mom spent every night on the phone with my dad, egging him on to eat better.
Strange.
Right? And this was before cell phones. I couldn't call my friends back home. I didn't have any friends here yet. I felt so alone. She was always in her room, taking care of my dad, letting him tell her how beautiful she is as if they were still married. I remember thinking, wow, you leave him, you move to another state, but you never leave a man, even when you do.
Jesus fucking Christ. You air toast me with your empty glass.
And that, my friend, is too much information.
We've come full circle, inverted the joke, and you signal for another drink, and you're in flow. The levee broke.
It's like, we all know about sham marriages, but what about a sham divorce? That's a good way to describe it. You stare at the table and the waitress plunks our drinks down and you thank her and sip. I just wish I knew why she left him at all if she was only going to spend the rest of her life on the phone with him, you know? Because why not just stay together if that's what it is? Why uproot my entire life? I don't answer your question. It was rhetorical. All you need is for me to listen. I look back, and I don't know how I survived. You breathe. You are activating the most important empathy, the empathy we have for ourselves. My mother and I were bickering nonstop. One night I lost my temper and threw my landline at her, and she had this huge welt on her forehead, so bad she had to get bangs to cover it up. I smile, but you furrow your brow, and oh, that's right. Violence against women is always bad, even when it's you. It was like Grey Gardens minus the fun. I love you. I guess your Cedar Cove fantasy got under my skin because no one welcomed us with open arms. You sip your drink. Then one day, Melinda asked me to eat lunch together. She told me all about her fucked up family. Foregone conclusion. They named their child Melinda. I told her all about mine. She said I'd fit in really well because everyone on this island is fucked up. They just like to pretend they're not. And I don't know. Life just went on from there. Melinda was my buffer. She showed me all that graffiti at Fort Ward. And that graffiti, well, it helped. It still helps. How so? It's like a conversation that's still alive. My mom and I, we never got around to hashing it out, but I go to Fort Ward and I feel like I can still talk to her even though she's gone. Like maybe one day she'll appear in the sky and tell me that I'm not doomed to mess up my daughter the way she messed me up. That is why you stay away from love and you shrug. I don't know. I'm probably just drunk. You're not drunk. You just haven't found anyone to talk to. You look at me. You can't believe I'm finally here. Then you smirk. You can't believe I'm still here.
Pretty bad, huh?
No, I say. Pretty human. I said the right thing and you laugh.
Well, I swore I'd never confuse Nomi like that. Ever.
You're self-conscious. You felt so safe with me that you forgot about where we are, and you glance around the pub, nervous. You wipe away a half tear, and you snort.
Sometimes I think I got pregnant just to piss her off, to remind her that if you really love someone, you know, you fuck them instead of just talking on the phone.
You are a little drunk now.
And once in a while, when you're actually having sex, the condom breaks. C'est la vie.
I get it, I say. Another anxious look around the bar.
Well, the timing was tough, but yeah, I did have this hunger to make my own little family, to kind of show her up.
And you did.
Have you met my kid?
Oh, come on, I say. Your kid is fucking great, you know it. You do know it, and it's important for you to realize that you are a good mother, because once you see that, you can let me in all the way. We are still treading water, even after all you said. You're holding back as you open up about your father and explain that he calls you a lot.
I don't always pick up. I mean, I have Nomi, I have a job, and every call ends in frustration. I'm not my mother, you know?
It's fundamentally different.
I can't stay on the phone with him all night. I will not do that to Nomi.
You think all men are a threat to your relationship with your daughter, and I am here to help you change. I'm sure he understands that.
I will not do that to my daughter. I won't let my life ruin her life.
You think it's your fault that your dad is sad, and I know how that feels. I push my plate to the edge of the table. You look at me. You need me. Look, I begin. You can't fix someone who doesn't want to be happy. Hi, Candace. You can't make anyone see the light if they prefer the dark. Hi, Beck. You try to do that. You end up on a dark road. You make bad decisions.
I really did move to Los Angeles for Amy, the stupidity. And then you get stuck. I have a permanent bond with Love Quinn, a son. It's not easy, but you have to accept that there's no right move with your dad. You can't save him from himself. The pub is clearing out and you're rubbing your neck.
Wow, you say. And here I thought we'd be gossiping about the mothballs.
You're officially drunk. Floppy hands and loose lips, and still I want you. You tell a long-winded go-nowhere story about an old friend in Arizona, and you can't remember her name, and you say you feel like a traitor sometimes. You don't keep in touch with anyone from your past in the desert, and you came here like a phoenix from Phoenix. I'm the same way, Mary Kay. The ability to move on doesn't make you a sociopath. You raise your glass and wink.
Let's hope so.
We're closer than closer. You tuck your chin into your hand.
Joe,
you say, pulling me in, making me think of your Murakami, all but sucked inside.
Tell me, do you like it in our library?
What I say right now matters, and I take my time. I like it in your library. You felt my yore. Your foxy lips are wet.
Do you feel good in the library?
I felt your good. Yes, I feel good in your library.
And you're pleased with your boss?
Oh, this is fun. And I stir the ice in my cocktail. Mostly.
Oh!
You say, and I am the human and you are my resource.
Mr. Goldberg, do you have a complaint about your supervisor?
That's a harsh word, Miss DeMarco. You lick your lips.
Tell me about your complaint.
Like I said, it's not a complaint. I just want more, Mary Kay.
More what, Mr. Goldberg?
Your bare foot finds my leg under the table. And I pay the bill. Fast. Cash. I am up. You are up. You say you need to stop in the bathroom, and the bathrooms are off to the left, and you go in and close the door, and then you open the door. You grab me by the collar of my black sweater and pull me into the bathroom and press your body into my body against the wall. The art in here is full of passion, nudity, and salt water. A naked woman in the sea on her back. Her hands grasp the shoulders of a frightened sailor, still clothed. It's a shipwreck. It's us, wrecked, groping. You kiss me and I kiss you and your tongue is at home in my mouth. Land ho! And the waves wash over your should-probablys. My hands slide under your tights, no panties, cotton crotch, and my thumbs find your lemon head. And you cling to me. You say it all. You wanted me on the red bed and you bite my sweater. This sweater makes you crazy, and there are sparks in the water. We are on fire, and you are the last page of Ulysses. You grab me.
Oh, God, Joe, oh, God!
But then you break away. Cinderella when the clock strikes 12. You remember what you are. A mom. My boss. And you are gone. Chapter 5. I know, it was just a kiss. I barely felt your Murakami, and I didn't lick your lemon head, but then again,
oh God, Joe, oh God!
What a fucking kiss. When you're with the right person, you do the right thing, and I was smart to let you go home. I went to my whisper room and counted my blessings for all the bad women who came before you. I get it now. Of course you ran. Real love is a lot, especially at our age. I don't go to Pegasus on the way to work. Your kiss is my caffeine, and you pushed me away. But this is the nature of grown-up love, especially when kids are involved. Push, pull, push, pull. I open the door to the library, pull, and you aren't at the front desk, and the mothball on duty doesn't like me.
The day we met, she asked if I'm a Bellevue Goldberg, and when I said no, she turned her nose up at me. She points at Nomi's chair.
You mind moving that? It's too cold by that window.
I move the fucking chair into the fucking stacks, and I grab my lunch. We eat the beef, and we eat the broccoli. And I tell the moth snob that I'll be right back, and she rolls her eyes. Rude.
I hate to break it to you, but your little friend called in sick today.
No. No. The moth snob just chuckles. You're not sick, and I go into the break room, and where are you? Were you really that drunk? Was our kiss made of tequila? I storm away from Silverstein's what-ifs, and I pass your office and your door is closed. There is no light in the attic, and you're not sick, you're scared. I take my post in fiction, and the day drags. I sell a recently widowed accountant on some Stuart Onan, and I get a day-tripping lesbian to read the first chapter of Fashion Victim, and I am good at my job, but I am better when you're here to chime in. All day I check my phone, and you don't text, and I don't text, and you kissed me, so maybe I should be the one to text you, and I try to find the words. Hi, but that's too fucking wimpy. Hey, but that's too fucking cocky. Are you there? But that's too fucking pushy. I'm here, but that's too fucking needy. I hate cell phones, because if it was 1993, I wouldn't have a fucking phone. And did you tell Melinda about our kiss? Did she get into your head? I walk out to the Japanese garden. I could bail on my shift. I'm just a volunteer. And I could pop by your house and be the Cusack to your valedictorian, but I can't do that, because Nomi's the one who's graduating this year, not you. And I don't do that. I don't pop by, and I don't steal phones, not anymore. I check your Instagram, nothing. And I check the meerkat's Instagram, but there's nothing about you, nothing but Klebold. I want to share a picture of a love story, but I would never be that lame with you, that blunt, that clingy. I need to talk to you now, because the longer we're apart, the more the kiss seems like a scratch in the windshield that's easily sealed, and I want to know why you're hiding. At the end of my never-ending shift, I skulk back to the break room, wondering if I used too much tongue, and then the door opens. It's you. Your eyes are puffy, and you fake a smile.
Hi.
Hey, I say. You're here. Do we hug? We don't hug. You're wearing a faded green sweater and you don't smile. You gnaw on your lip. You didn't get enough sleep. And you say you just stopped by to pick up a few things. You sit across from me like we're a couple of mothballs comparing our MRI results, like you weren't sucking on my tongue a few hours ago. I lean over the table to get closer and you arch your back, cold. Farther. Look, I say, the last thing I want to do is make you uncomfortable.
I know, you say. I feel the same way.
I don't speak. You don't speak. You told me so much last night, but I am getting that sick feeling that you didn't tell me everything, that what you told me isn't the whole story, but only part of the story. You are looking at me as if you are warming me up for the news. The bad news, the worst news in the world. And here it comes, those treacherous words.
Joe, we can't do this. You didn't tell anyone, did you?
Of course not, Mary Kay. You know I'd never do that. You are too relieved.
Okay, good. Because if anyone here found out, if anyone said anything to know me...
Mary Kay, look at me. You look at me. I am a steel fucking trap. You have my word. You calm down a little, but you're still flinching, looking over your shoulder, a paranoid inmate on Crucible Island. You don't let me talk. You say that last night was a drunken mistake. No, and you weren't thinking clearly. Yes, you fucking were. And I tell you that you were perfect, and you shudder.
I am anything but perfect.
My words are coming out all wrong, and I know you're not perfect. I'm not perfect, but it would be too cheesy and needy to tell you that we are perfect together. You purse your lips, those lips that are puffy from my kiss, me.
Can we just go back to normal? You know, how we were?
I bob my head like a trained seal that couldn't make it in the wild. Absolutely, I say. I wasn't expecting to rush into anything with you. We can take it slow. I want to take it slow.
It's a big fat lie, and you cluck. That's the thing, Joe. There is no it. There can't be an it. I have a daughter.
I know.
I can't be getting home drunk after midnight. She has to come first.
Of course, Nomi comes first. I know that. You hide your face behind your hands and tell me that you're not emotionally available right now, and I want to take a sledgehammer to the chip in the windshield and smash the glass because you're making our kiss about your daughter. You pull your hands away.
It's her senior year, Joe, and I don't want to miss any part of it.
Then don't spend two nights a week at a fucking wine bar with Melanda.
She needs me. She doesn't have a lot of friends.
You raised an independent daughter who likes to read, and so what if she's not a mini socialite the way you were? Neither was I at that age.
To you, she's halfway out the door, all grown up. But time flies, and it's almost Thanksgiving, and in a few months, she'll be away, and I just can't make any big changes when change is already coming.
Ha. As if life is ever that predictable, and you should let me in now, right now, so that I'm carving your turkey next week, and you are wrong, so wrong, and you sigh.
Do you get it?
Of course I get it, Mary Kay. You're right, there's no rush. We can put this on hold. You smile.
What a relief. Thank you, Joe.
You win because you built the boxing ring. Me versus Nomi, and I can't hit above the belt in the womb. That said, you came to see me, and you wouldn't be justifying yourself to me if you didn't care about me, if you didn't want me eating your mashed potatoes and your Murakami. Yeah, there was something off about your little speech, Mary Kay, because deep down, you know you belong with me right now. Our chairs squeak when we stand, and you hang your head.
Do you hate me?
You're better than that. You don't ask stupid questions, but I give you the stupid answer you deserve right now. Of course I don't hate you. Come on, you know that. Then you bite your lip and say the worst word in the English language.
Friends?
You cannot shove me onto a tufted sofa with Seamus and Melanda, and we're not friends, Mary Kay. You want to fuck me, but I shake your hand and repeat your hollow sitcom of a word that does not apply to us. Friends. Chapter 6. I go outside. I walk and I walk and my pinky toes burn. These sneakers are for show, not for this. And I walk away from your house and I want to walk into your house and I really did fuck up last night, today. I should have torn off your chastity tights. I should have brought you home or I should have gone home with you and there is no going back and I am the man. Bainbridge is safe, but did I text you to make sure you got home okay? Nope. You'd been drinking, and did I insist on being your escort? Nope. I walk into Blackbird, and the whole fecal-eyed family is in here, even the grandfather. And this island is too fucking small, and there are so many of them, and there is only one of me, and I get a coffee and sit outside on a bench. I go on Instagram. Bad Joe. Bad. Night is falling and Nomi posted a picture of you on your sofa and you are asleep in your clothes.
When Mama is sick. Hashtag hangover.
I wish I could like this picture. I wish I could love this picture, but I don't feel the love right now. My toes are on fire. My whole body is on fire, but you're out cold, dead to me, to the world. I take a screenshot of the photo and examine every corner, every centimeter.
I'm not invading your privacy, Mary Kay. We all post our photos knowing that our followers will zoom in to grade us. I zoom in. My heart beats. The fecal-eyed family barges onto the street, and none of them say hello. Fuck you, family! And I look down at my phone, and what the hell, Mary Kay? There's a bottle of beer on the end table that makes my blistered toes pound. You don't drink beer, you don't like the taste, and you don't let Nomi drink beer, and the bottle is open, half empty. Whose is it, Mary Kay? Who the fuck is drinking beer in your house? I send a text to Shortus. Hey, Seamus, that gym kicked my ass today. Beer? I wait and I walk. My toes are never going to speak to me again. No can do, new guy. Doing a 10-day dry out. Remember, that voice in your head that says you can't do it is a liar. Ugh. I hate gym culture. And the beer isn't his, but whose is it? I reach the beginning of your street, and your house is close. But if I walk down that street and look in your window, I can't. I promised I would be good, and being good means believing in you, in us, and hey, it's just one beer. You did look bad today. I don't know everything about you, and it's possible that you drink half a beer to take the edge off when you're hungover, and I go home and watch more Succession, and you don't call, you don't text, and Shortus hits me up to tell me that we can get a beer next week, maybe, and phones have made it so easy to be friends without ever having to see your friends, and that's one good thing about today. One. I did it. I survived the longest, most mind-fuckiest day of the year, and my mind is clear again. I'm calm. I'm not going to let one stupid bottle of beer get in our way. All that matters is the kiss, Mary Kay. You broke a rule for me. You swore that you would never get involved with some guy while your daughter lives at home, and you did. And you know what? I need to bend a rule, too. This is a scenic island, and I've barely done any exploring. I will not go to Fort fucking Ward without you. And okay, yeah, I went on a couple of nature walks in the Grand Forest when I first moved here, but I was too raw to really breathe any of it in. I tie the laces on my running shoes. My toes won't hate me today. And I zip up my hoodie and I put on my headphones. Hello, Sam Cooke. And I lock up the house and do what all the well-rounded motherfucking men around here do every day. Some of them twice a day. Run. I could run on one of the beaches, but the coast is rocky and mottled by McMansions. I could run on the sidewalks, but why should I waste my time on pavement when I can run in the woods? I didn't design the island, Mary Kay. And it's not my fault that your house is in a development. It's not my fault that you chose to live in a waterfront home where the only thing that separates your backyard from the sea is a 2-foot-wide trail that is open to the public. Your choice, not mine. I didn't know you when I moved here, and you're the one who told me that you live right around the corner. You've said it a dozen times, and you weren't lying, and I'm here, not on your street, but on the trail by the water, and Jesus Christ, Mary Kay. There's something almost perverse about this trail, about you and your neighbors in Wesley Landing. You're all fearless exhibitionists, aren't you? You all choose to live on land that is the opposite of private. You don't have fences because fences would block your access to the trail, your view of the foliage, the rocky coast, the water, and I would never live like this. But you do. I stop to stretch, as all runners must do, to keep the muscles loose, healthy. There's a large rock on the property line of your house, engraved with the name of your community. It's wider than the trunks of the trees, and this is the perfect place for me to stretch my calves. I plant my feet against the back and lean over, and it feels good to stretch, and as luck would have it, at some point my luck did have to turn around. I have a view of your deck. Who knew? Your sliding glass door is open, and you sit on your deck with a half-empty bottle of Diet Coke. See that, Mary Kay? You do need me. You sure as fuck don't need any more sugar substitutes. You're on the phone, no doubt with Melinda, and I turn off Sam Cooke and remove my headphones the way a lot of people do when they stretch. I can't hear you, and I'm no botanist, but I think there might be poison ivy where I am, so to be safe, I move to another tree. You're used to the people in the woods, on the trails, and you don't flinch at the leaves crunching beneath my feet. I can hear you now. You don't know what to make for dinner. You have salmon steaks in the freezer, but they're frostbitten. You need a new freezer. You need to see my freezer. And now you're back to counseling Melinda.
Don't text him. You know how it is. If he likes you, he'll text you. And if he doesn't like you, then it's his loss.
She's arguing. Can't hear her. Don't need to hear her. And the meerkat is in the kitchen slamming cabinets, annoyed. You ask Melinda to hold on, and you turn your head.
Nomi, honey, do you want salmon? Do I ever want salmon? It's like 100 years old, and before you say it, no, I don't want Mexican chicken.
You laugh. You're sick of your own chicken, too, and sigh. Oh, to be a mother and cook every day for thousands of days and be tired of your own Mexican chicken. The meerkat slams another cabinet.
Can we cook out on the grill? Well, I guess so. Are you already hungry?
The meerkat shrugs. Whatever. And she grabs a bag of Tostitos and stomps off to her room. You go back to Melinda, and I feel for Melinda, who's probably contemplating a singleton cauliflower pizza.
Sorry, you say. I'm back.
You get a text, and you read the text. And you respond to the text. And is it the man who drank that domestic beer on your end table? You're still counseling Melinda, but what about us? When is it your turn to tell her about the best kiss of your life? And seriously, who drank that fucking beer? The acid is cooling in my thighs, but it's burning in my heart, and you shiver and stand. You go into your kitchen and you close the screen door. You close the slider and it squeaks. You need WD-40. And I can't bear the silence, so I put on my headphones. Sam Cooke tries to comfort me, but he's wasting his time. I touch my fingers to my toes and the blood rushes to my head, and my headphones cancel the noise of the world, but they can't silence the alarm in my limbic system, the one that dings now. Goosebumps crop up on my arms and my legs as the hairs on the back of my neck stand up straight. So many tiny soldiers. Fight or flight. Slowly I lift my head and the alarm in my brain was right. Someone is here. 3 feet away. Armed with a backpack and a cell phone and the two most dangerous weapons in these woods. Eyes. Blinking beneath unflattering round glasses. It's your daughter, the meerkat. Chapter 7. On Animal Planet, this is how the lion dies. The lion has no natural predators, but an intrusive human on a mission to break the rules of nature shoots him for the fuck of it.
Hey,
she says.
You know that's my house, right?
I close my eyes. Please, God, please don't kill me now. The meerkat remains standing, emotionless, still.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I say. I got a cramp. She nods, distracted. Good sign.
One time this old guy died out here. It was summer. He had a heart attack.
That stings a little, but it also snaps me out of my paranoia. Well, I'm not that old.
Sorry, she says. I'm just in a mood because my mom's making me go get charcoal.
Ah, so you were texting with your meerkat. You going to the town and country? She furrows her brow.
We just call it the TNC. God, you're such a newbie still.
That was a little vicious. But it's the same with kids as it is with adults. It's never about you. It's about them. She knows she was rude, and she squeezes the straps of her backpack, and I smile. Cool Joe. Affable Joe. I'll head there too, I say. I could use a vitamin water. Now we're walking, and this is normal. This is what people do when they bump into each other, and the meerkat truly isn't alarmed to see me, and here comes another jogger. Hey, Nomi! And she knows him too. And I flinch at a dog barking in the woods, and she laughs. It's just a dog. Are you scared of dogs? No, I say. I'm still rattled, but I have to remember. I was caught off guard, yes, but I wasn't caught. I'm just out of my comfort zone. You grew up in all this, but the woods are creepy to me. I remember taking R.I.P. Beck to the woods, and I shudder, and the meerkat grunts.
Oh, please, she says. These aren't woods. The real woods are up by my old school. See, when I was in middle school, I found this old Buick there.
I nod. Cool.
Yeah.
She sounded like you just then.
There were all these empty alcohol bottles.
She's so young for her age. Alcohol.
And the year before that, there was this big abandoned house in the woods, too. That place was super cool. It used to be a home for wayward boys.
I raise my eyebrows like a good listener. Whoa.
Now that was creepy. You go up to the fourth floor and you think the house is going to fall down. And there are old-fashioned wheelchairs and cobwebs. It was so cool. But whatever. Everything cool here gets destroyed.
That's just called growing up. See, down at Isla, I listen to these old guys, actual old guys, and they sound like you.
Like me? I don't think so.
Oh, sure, Nomi. They talk about how this place used to be, too. How nobody locked their doors, and they left the keys in the car, and didn't worry about anyone breaking in because there were more crickets and frogs than people.
I don't think that's true.
Well, that's the point. Every generation thinks their way was the best way.
But the home for wayward boys, that was actually cool. It was a place to go. Then they tore it down, and now there's nothing.
We step aside for a set of cyclists.
So, you're from New York or something, right?
That's a good sign, Mary Kay, a show of actual social skills.
Yep, I say. And it was nothing like this. My library is a good example. We had homeless people in there, crackheads. Now that was scary.
At least it's real. Everything here is fake, fake, fake.
She tugs on the straps of her backpack, and I'm so relieved that I'm an adult. What a nightmare it is to be a teenager, to think there's a place where everyone isn't fake, fake, fake.
Sorry, she says. I'm just mad. My mom always goes crazy before Thanksgiving, but this year, she's crazy, crazy.
Crazy in love.
Oh?
We always stay here, but now she's dragging us to Arizona to see my papa.
I wish I had backpack straps to grab because this is news to me. Be cool, Joe. Well, maybe Phoenix will be fun. She just grunts. Yeah, right.
So what do you do for stupid Thanksgiving?
Friends and essays and frozen pizza. I might hop a ferry and volunteer at a soup kitchen. She waves at a woman raking leaves, and the woman waves back, and we are normal. This is normal. But then Nomi gives me what the kids call side eye.
But you said you hated the city. You know there's no soup kitchen here, right?
Hate's a strong word, Nomi, and I like it here, but on a day like that, it's nice to get out there and help people in need. She just stares ahead.
People never say that love is a strong word.
Is she high? No, she's just overdosing on Klebold poems and loneliness. Huh. Why do you think that is?
Whatever. I'm just annoyed because my mom told me not to say I hate her, but she took my Columbine again, and I have all these notes in it, and I do hate her for that, and dragging us to Phoenix. Anyone would.
And don't tell me she's just looking out for me. You're wrong. She's a hypocrite. She's mad because it's Columbine. She wouldn't be mad if I was into some stupid story about horny babysitters. And I'm sorry, but Columbine is the best. It is the book.
And now I miss being a teenager. That salty conviction that you have found it, the thing that makes your mind make sense to you. You'd want me to be compassionate, so I tell her I get it, that I too love that book. She just looks at me. Suspicious meerkat eyes. And no wonder. Adults lie all the time, but not this one. All right, I say. The part that really stuck with me was all the Eric stuff, fooling his probation officer, how easy it was for him to convince all these so-called smart adults that he was okay. That's the problem with this country. The injustice system is pretty ineffective. I want to talk about incompetent social workers, but the meerkat doesn't care about stupid Eric, and this is why she doesn't have friends, because she doesn't understand that people take turns. She's back to ranting about Dylan's poems, and this is my chance to save her, to help her. I get it, I say, because that's the first rule of helping any kid. You have to validate their feelings. But I think your mom's upset because, well, this therapist I went to once, he told me that sometimes we all get a mouse in our house.
Are you a slob?
I picture her going home and telling you I have mice. No, I say. See, it's a metaphor. The mouse is something you can't stop thinking about or doing.
And the house is your head. Yawn.
I know, I say. It's a little simple, but the point is that when you get really into something, it feels good. But it's not necessarily good for you. I've been there a bunch of times. She is quiet. Kids are a relief, the way they just shut down and think when they feel like it. And then she looks at me.
What was your thing?
Women, terrible city women. Well, when I was a kid, it was this movie called Hannah and Her Sisters. She turns her nose up at me and, oh fuck, that's right, Melanda.
Ew, she says. That's Woody Allen, and he's on Melanda's DNW list.
Do not watch?
Yep, she says. And he's at the top, like the tippity top.
Well, your teacher is sure on top of things.
She's more like my aunt.
Melanda is the mouse in your house. Well, my point was, that movie was my Columbine, the thing that changed my life. See, I lived in New York, but I didn't live in that New York, and I wanted to live in that movie. I stole that tape from Blockbuster, watched it every second I could. Nomi responds by repeating that Woody Allen is bad, just like his movie, and I won't fuck up like I did in the diner. Okay, but does Melanda think it's okay for you to read Dylan Klebold's poems? She growls at the trees above.
There's literally no comparison. He was my age.
Okay, but you have to admit, he did some terrible things. Explain why you think that's okay. No kid wants a pop quiz, and she groans again.
It just is.
Look, Nomi, I am channeling Dr. Nikki. We got off track. I was just trying to tell you that it's not always good to have a mouse in your house, no matter what the mouse is.
Did you really read Columbine? The whole book?
I'm not R.I.P. Benji, and I never lie about books, especially with my potential stepdaughter. Yep.
Did you also read all the stuff Dylan wrote that's online?
Kids do this. They bring it back to them, especially a kid like Nomi. Younger than her age, going to school every day in those glasses, so wrong, and wishing that some maladjusted boy or girl is writing poems for her, but knowing it's not possible because she's watching too closely. She picks at a hangnail.
You know how he writes a letter to the girl he loves and tells her that if she loves him, she has to leave a blank piece of paper in his locker?
Yeah, I say, but he never gave her the letter.
But he wrote it, she says. And that was sweet.
I hope some exchange student with buck teeth moves here this year and rocks her world, and she crosses her arms.
Anyway, I'm still not going to watch a Woody Allen movie.
Well, that's fine. Do what you want.
So you don't care?
I laugh off the question, and maybe I'll go back to school and become a guidance counselor. Look, Nomi, it's like this. Who cares what Melinda thinks? Who cares what I think? You only need to decide what you think. She kicks a rock.
Well, I can't watch any movie tomorrow anyway because we have our stupid family bonding.
I'm not a part of your family, but I am a part of your family, and I force my voice to be steady as if I'm asking for directions. What's that mean for the Gilmore Girls?
Well, first we oversleep, so we wind up on the 11 o'clock, even though we said we'd take the 10.
And then?
We take the ferry and walk around and look at tchotchkes.
Tchotchkes.
We also go to bookstores or whatever, but you know how it is. Mostly tchotchkes.
Your desk is crowded with tchotchkes, and I laugh. Yep.
Then we go to a restaurant with a long line, and my mom is too hungry to wait, and I'm like, just put our name in, and she won't do it. And then the people who walked in after us get a table, and I'm like, see, Mom?
You said that she was the problem, and she says that you're the problem, and I can't wait to be a part of your fucking family.
And then she wants pizza. But then she wants dumplings, and she's like, oh, let's go to this place I heard about from Melinda.
I laugh. Been there.
And then we go, and the place isn't open yet, because she can barely work Yelp, and we just walk around starving and look at more tchotchkes, and then she wants some tchotchke she saw in the morning, and she gets paranoid that someone else got it, and we run back to the shop, and it's gone, and she's all, wah.
You're afraid that you're going to lose your shot with me, and I smile. Then what?
She still can't make up her mind about another stupid tchotchke because that would mean making a decision. So we go to a coffee shop and she gets mad when I take my book out like we're supposed to talk all the freaking time. But it's BS because she's sick of me too. And she takes her book out and then we come home. And that's our family bonding. The end.
I applaud and the meerkat laughs. But then she turns into a young version of you, serious.
It's really not as stupid as it sounds. I'm not mean.
You're not mean. Family is... it's a lot.
It's just weird to, like, try to bond, you know?
I do know. I remember sitting with Love in prison and trying to feel in love with her. And Nomi's done with me.
I'm gonna get a coffee first. See ya.
I wave. Say hi to your mom. She heard my request, but she's already distracted because she ran into my fecal-eyed neighbors, and I can't rely on Nomi to tell you about our great conversation. She runs into people all the time because that's life here, and she's mad that you took her Columbine away. I walk into the TNC, and it's bustling. I feel good. I bent the rules, and the universe rewarded me, Mary Kay, because now I know about your plans for tomorrow. And I... am on board. It is time for our family to do some fucking bonding. Chapter 8. I know life is ugly. I knew that Bainbridge Island was never going to be exactly like Cedar Cove. I'm waiting to board the ferry, and this guy in line in front of me is wearing a knit fucking skull cap, someone made it for him, you can just tell, and yellow-framed sunglasses, and he's rubbing his son in my face, a lesser 40 with a runny nose. He's also with his wife, the one who knit that stupid skull cap and lied to him, told him he can pull off yellow shades. She's a puffy jacket sourpuss, and she sniffs her coffee.
I think this is oat milk, babe.
And I am alone, and they are together, and it is absurd. But not for long, right? Right. I am taking the 10 a.m. ferry to Seattle to get there before you, and I'm a little pushy. Gently, Joseph.
but I want to escape from the in-your-face family that isn't mine, so I move to the left side of the boarding throng into a pack of lawsuit-hungry retired lawyers just fucking hoping that someone's landscaper mows their lawn because it would give them a project. Yes, it's twee here. If you go to the police station on your birthday, you get a free donut. You don't even have to show ID. But there are 25,000 residents eating locally farmed beets and commuting to Seattle, forming little commuter cliques. Debbie Maycumber would feel for me, alone on a Saturday, now marooned with techies talking soccer. I belong nowhere, but this is temporary, and I'm on board. That's progress. And I put on my headphones and break left for the stairs, two at a time, up to the sun deck. The air helps. The sea, too, a far cry from that heady brown Malibu foam. And I sit on a bench, but I'm faced with a wall clock covered by a sign that reads, I am broken. I find another place to sit. Gotta be positive, because it's a big day for us, Mary Kay. I'm not going to interrupt your bonding with your daughter, and I'm not stalking you. My plan is simple. I'll have some me time, and you'll have your family time, and I'll watch for the signs. When I notice that the two of you are getting sick of each other, I'll bump into you.
Joe, what a nice surprise.
And we'll ride back to the island together. Then we'll have dinner at my house. I bought salmon steaks, and they're not fucking frostbitten like yours. Thanksgiving is 5 days away, and that's plenty of time for you to cancel your trip to Phoenix. And you'll do that after you realize that you can date me and be a good mom at the same time. I walk toward the bow, to another bank of benches, and I zip up my jacket. It's not freezing, but it isn't springtime for Hitler, and I take off my headphones because people up here are polite, alone like me. No one is forcing a neighbor to overhear one side of a cell phone conversation about a busy, boring life, and I can't get that clock out of my head. I am broken. I check Love's Instagram. I am nervous. And 40 is biting his nanny Tressa, who says that my son reminds her of Adam fucking Levine, and Love is laughing. It isn't funny, and there is nothing I can do. I delete the fucking app and shove my phone back in my pocket, but then I freeze. I blink. I wish I could delete my body, because what the fuck, Mary Kay? You're here. You and Nomi are on this boat, my boat, the one you're supposed to miss. You're 30 feet away, and you're leaning over the railing, and I scoot across the bench, closer to the center of the vessel, and I pick up a newspaper and listen to my heartbeat between my ears. Calm down, Joe. This is like yesterday. If you see me, you see me. It's fine. People go to Seattle, and I am people. I bend the upper corner of the newspaper, and whoever is driving this ship decides that it's time to go, and we're on the move. You pull a fleece hat out of your saggy, bottomless purse, and you offer it to the meerkat, and she deflects. I can't hear you, but I see you throw your hands up and look heavenward. Help me, Jesus! And the meerkat sulks and stares at the horizon. You two are off to a rough start, and I watched an episode of Gilmore Girls last night. They needed Luke at times like this, and maybe I should just walk up to you right now and save your morning. I play it out in my head.
Joe? Is that you?
Wow, Mary Kay, what a surprise. Do you want to go fuck in the bathroom? I know. Too much. And the meerkat might tell you that she told me all about your plans. Think, Joe, think. If you saw me, you'd come say hi. That's what friends do. I'm still in hiding, and you haven't noticed me yet. Long live print newspapers. And the meerkat leans over the railing.
Ugh, she shouts. If you don't leave me alone, I'm gonna jump, I swear!
You tell her that's not funny, and she tells you to stop being such a worrywart, and this is adorable. I love our family. And then an oaf in a t-shirt stomps up the stairs and into the frame, and Nomi points at this oaf like she knows him.
Look at Dad, she says. He's wearing a t-shirt and shorts, and he's fine.
The word dad is an iceberg, and there is no dad. Dad is gone. Dad isn't on your Instagram, and Nomi has never said the word dad, and our ship is taking on water. Fast.
Hey, Phil, you say. Husband of the year, will you tell your daughter to put a hat on?
Dad has a name. It's Phil. And I am Leo in the ice water. I will freeze to death on this boat, in this water. The man you call Phil, husband. This is not happening. He shushes you, and our ship is cruising. We are sinking. And he's a rock and roll type of ass, and you are married. Buried. No, Mary Kay. No. You don't have a husband. But you do. And this guy isn't husband material, but he is. And he's not Eddie Vedder, and it's not 1997. So why is he sitting there with his feet up, Doc Martens, wiping his slimy hands on his Mother Love Bone t-shirt while he dictates God knows what into his phone? He pecks you on the cheek, and you let him kiss you. And the ballroom on this boat is flooded and the water is cold, and you touch him. His face. You casually break every bone in my body and pull a sweater from your purse. He won't take the sweater, and I can't take this. Won't take this. Married, buried. You must think I'm a moron. The mothballs didn't tell me, and Melanda didn't tell me, and Seamus didn't tell me, and your little community is a clique of mean-spirited liars, but fuck me, because this is what I get for being Mr. Goody Two-Shoes, because since when do I rely on strangers to tell me the truth about the people I love? You're married. You really are. He's whining about your upcoming trip to Phoenix right now, and he sleeps in a bed with you, and we can't hang out like a family today because he is your fucking family. Not me. Married. Buried. He holds up a bag of chips, and Nomi claps her hands. And I snap a picture of the motherfucker, and there's a tattoo on his leg, and the ink is black. Sacrophil. I remember that band. Barely. One of those 90s not quite Nirvana groups, and why the fuck didn't I Google you on day fucking one? Your husband is an overgrown fanboy in dirty cargo shorts, and he has bad taste in tattoos, and he produces another bag of potato chips, like some third-rate magician. I hate magic. And I hate him, and right now, worst of all, I relate to Nomi because I hate you, Mary Kay. You lied to me. You want Phil's chips, and you wave him on, and I remember you in the bathroom of the pub, when you were mine, when you kissed me. He tosses the chips to you, and you catch the bag like you're in a bridal party, like it's a bouquet. Married, buried. This is why you ran away from me, and this is why we've been treading water, and Nomi screams at the top of her lungs, Dad, come look! Your husband is an iceberg, and I can't take it anymore. This is the story of my life. Everything that should be mine, everyone, they're all snatched away from me. I lost my son, and I've tried so hard to be decent, good. I've tried to forget all the Shel Silverstein poems I memorized when I was incarcerated, when I thought I'd actually get to be a dad, and now you do the same. You steal my shot at family, and I can't forgive you. The same way I can't forget those fucking poems. You used me, Mary Kay. Love stole my son, but you have stolen my dignity, my self-respect, and I should have staked out your house the day we met. Everything looks different now. You weren't hazing me at the diner. You were playing fast and loose, weren't you? You thought one of your friends might say something about your husband in passing. And that's why you were looking around in the pub so much on our date. You were afraid we'd get caught. You're a dishonest woman. You don't wear a wedding ring and you criticize your mother for her sham of a divorce, but what the hell do you call this? Your husband's angry teenage boy outfit is embarrassing. You must be the breadwinner. And okay. I never directly asked if you're married, but that's because you're my boss.
And okay, it would have been presumptuous of you to passive-aggressively declare your marital status.
So my husband loved the Lisa Tadeo book.
Because that's not your style. But who the fuck are we kidding? Your husband would never read the Lisa Tadeo book. He's not a reader. I can tell, and you are right, Mary Kay. We see what we want to see, and I didn't want to see it. Same way I didn't want to believe that love was capable of stealing my child. I grabbed the railing. The ship hasn't sunk just yet. Yes, you're married. But if your marriage was any good, you wouldn't be so into me. I can still save us. I Google you. I should have done this weeks ago. And there you are, Mary Kay DeMarco, and oh no, oh no. Your husband isn't a fan of that fucking band. He is in the band. The lead singer, of course, and Google knows his name because Phil DeMarco was that guy who sang that song. You're the shark inside my shark. You're the second set of teeth, and I just die underneath. I'm the one who dies underneath because that's you on the cover of his album. And the history is sinking in, sinking our ship. Those are your legs under your black tights, and gender reveal parties are nothing compared to this big reveal. It's a dad, it's a husband, it's a has-been rock star in shorts. We're getting close to the dock, and I'm not going to be intimidated by your husband. You were his muse, and you're not my muse. I respect you as a person. And okay, so he was kind of semi-famous, but he would never be in a Clue on Jeopardy. And I'd rather be your work husband than the husband you loathe so much that you can't even speak of him in casual conversation. He walks up to you and puts his arms around you, and again, the boat is flooded and the water is cold, but I won't let it get to me. I will not fucking freeze to death. You are telling him he needs to put on a sweater. I know you. And it's mind-bending to see you like this. Married. Buried. How long did you think you could get away with this, Mary Kay? We're slowing down and you're searching for something in your purse. And I bet you've been winging it because that's what you do. Nomi was the surprise of your life. And before I came into your life, you were on cruise control. You married a music man, and I'm sure you loved him at first. You were his tiny dancer, and foxes do like attention. Your body parts are on the cover of his album, but times change. You told me that you never understood why your mother left your father. You called it a sham divorce. That's why you're still in the cage with Phil. You don't know how to leave that rat, do you? Nobody in your family is hungry, but you're rummaging through your purse. You pull an Ani Katz book out of your purse. I told you to read that one. And you pause. You're thinking about me. You want me. And then you shove it back in your purse, and I feel guilty because you must be constantly worried about what happens when the book is out of the bag, when I find out about your life, when Phil finds out about me. Your rat groans.
Emmy, stop it already, man. We're not starving to death.
No, you say. I know I have a candy bar. It's in here somewhere.
You and I are the same, aren't we? We sacrifice our feelings and our desires for the people we love. The meerkat is annoyed.
Forget it, Mom.
And Phil is disinterested.
Em, I'm gonna eat with Freddy.
But you're still looking for it, determined to provide for your family, and then you prevail and wave a Three Musketeers bar in the air.
Got it!
It's impossible not to love you right now. The sheer joy on your face, the win. You bite the wrapper of the candy bar that you knew was in your purse, and you are the girl who dreamed up the empathy bordello. You care about everyone, and that includes your rat husband. You tear the candy bar in half, and I love you for the big things and the little things, the pleasure you take in sharing. But there's a fine line between selfless devotion and self-destruction, and you give one half of your three musketeers to Nomi and the other half to Phil, and what's left for you? We disembark and I stay out of the way and let you and your family cross the bridge into the city, while I take the stairs down to the street. I watch Phil wave goodbye to you and the meerkat, and of course this rat stayed with you. Who would leave you? And you couldn't leave him, he's too pathetic. Exposing his legs so that everyone can see his sacrophil tattoo. You stayed because it wouldn't be fair for Phil to fail as a rock star and a husband. And I didn't see any of it coming. I got soft when I moved here, trying so hard to be good, as if being good is ever that simple. Life is complicated. Morals are complicated. I wouldn't even be here today if I hadn't bent the rules. I slip into a tourist trap restaurant. I really do prefer our small town life. And I order a cup of coffee and begin my work. Your husband's band is in shambles, but he works nights hosting his own radio show called Fill in the Blues. And if he's up all night, well, I bet you haven't had sex in a long time. He doesn't care about you, not really. The man lives his life for his fans. They call themselves Philistines. And he encourages these loud lost losers to keep on rooting for a sacrophil comeback. Our world is fucked. Phil has fans. And your life is fucked. Phil has you. But now that I'm indoors, on my own, I don't feel so bad about any of it. I'm happy that the jig is up. We're not teenagers, and I have no interest in love triangles, never did, and I'm a New Yorker, Mary Kay. I've dealt with rats all my life. It's nothing personal. I don't hate them, but rats carry diseases, and you're in luck because I know how to get rid of them. I go to the rats' YouTube channel. I only know the song about the shark, Sacrophil's legitimate hit, but it's time to get into the liner notes. The deep tracks that tell your story. The first song at the top of the page is 10 minutes and 32 seconds long. Give me a fucking break. And it's called Dead Man Running. And oh, Phil, my man, don't you worry. Your time has come. Chapter 9. In the sixth grade, there was this kid in my class named Alan Brigseed. Obviously, they called him Alan Badseed, and he was portly. Walked with a limp because of an issue with his bones. Wore football jerseys to school every single day and was determined to be a quarterback for the Giants. Real life isn't Rudy, and back then I knew that poor Alan Badseed would wind up working at a Dick's Sporting Goods in New Jersey. I was right. And 2 years ago, poor Alan Badseed died in his mother's basement while he was jerking off. Your husband reminds me of Alan, Mary Kay. I spent the past 36 hours learning everything there is to know about Phil DeMarco. I read every profile. I watched every ancient on-screen interview where he talks over the other guys in his band. I dug into the Fill in the Blues archives, and I went on his Twitter, he doesn't understand hashtags, and writes peace hashtag at the end of every tweet. And most of his followers are aging dope whores, apologies to dope and prostitutes, and they tag him in pictures of their implants, and sometimes he likes those pictures, and do you know about this? Or did you just stop caring a long time ago? Like Alan Brigseed, Phil won't give up the dream. And like Alan Brigseed, Phil would be better off dead. He doesn't work. He makes pennies hosting his graveyard shift radio show, it's a glorified infomercial, 5 nights a week, and okay, so he does make good money on royalties. It's one of his favorite subjects on the blues, but it's a little less every year. There are few things more tragic than a man hell-bent on becoming something he just can't be.
You probably expected more sharks to come along, but like so many artists, that was the best Phil had in him. He was famous for a second, and fame is poison. Rockstar fame is especially vile. It's a drop of food coloring, and one drop, one innocent, hungry shark in the water, is enough to turn all the clear water red and make it stay that way. Every Sacrifil album is less successful than the one before, and it's some Edgar Allan Poe shit, Mary Kay, the slow demise of his falling, rising star. The way he fights it every night on the air, gaslighting Philistines, raging against the industry, thanking you for saving his life as he blames you for domesticating him. He plays his part well, claiming that he put his art in the backseat so he could throw his soul into being a dad. In reality, Phil just fucking failed. The turnover rate in his band is high, scary high, and if he managed to Dunkin' fucking Donuts, he would have been fired because of his inability to play well with others. I turn on the heat in my car. It's cold tonight, and I'm parked outside of your rat's recording studio. I bent the rules for us, and bent rules are meant to be broken. I brought two Rachel Ray knives. And Phil's untimely death won't tarnish Bainbridge's reputation as a safe haven. He's just famous enough to be a wild card, and when an early morning jogger finds him on the street tomorrow, it will seem like the work of a Philistine gone crazy. Karmic payback after years of getting close with his fans, following them back on Twitter, encouraging them to pop by and hang. The cops might also think it's a drug deal gone bad because I've also learned that your husband is in recovery. I listened to every song he ever wrote, and I'm sorry to say it, but you are nothing compared to his true love, heroin. I know it all, Mary Kay. I know that you had to downsize a few years ago. It's also fucking relative. And move to what Phil calls your sellout suit and tie salt box in Wesley Landing. He is pretty funny, I'll give him that, but the privilege of it all. Like he deserves a Led Zeppelin-esque castle in the woods because he has one song that some people know by heart. I'm so happy I'm not famous, and I have a whole new outlook on you. You got together with Phil in high school. He was in a band. You were into that. You got pregnant in college. He put a needle in his arm and penned the best songs of his life. You were his muse, and then, when he couldn't pull off the magic again, you were the one he blamed. You're his mother. You're his babysitter. You're his enabler. But tonight, I set you free. It's 4 a.m., and Phil's awfully lonely. Oh, how he would hate that reference. And I should get out of my car, walk inside, and end his life once and for all. I grip the handle of the knife. I turn up the volume on Phil's swan song, Sorry, Man, and my timing is good, Mary Kay. The poor guy is really going off the rails tonight, ranting about lucky Kurt Cobain. As always, his mouth is too close to the mic. It's true, man. His voice isn't what it used to be. Nirvana is Nirvana because Courtney killed Kurt. And when you're a guy like me, a survivor... Well, we worship the dead. We put them on pedestals. Music just sounds better when the singer's a goner, and it's the story of a lot of artists. You die. You're not around to feel the love. And here comes the love. He talked as if Kurt Cobain wasn't a star before he died, and maybe I won't have to kill Phil. Maybe there's an angry mob on the way right now, and I check the rear view. Nothing. And of course there's no angry mob. I'm one of 10, maybe 12 people listening at this late, early hour. Aw, man, he says. I'm not bitter. Oh, yes you are, man. But there was this one night, me and Chris were jamming. Impossible to verify. Chris Cornell is dead. I had this riff. He riffed on the riff, and let's just say... A co-writing credit on Black Hole Sun would have been nice. I grip my knife because you do not speak ill of the dead. But then he growls.
Shut it, Phil. Don't be a whiny little bitch.
He opens a can of beer.
Thing is, I'm not a pretty boy, and if I looked a little more like cutesy-tootsy Eric Clapton...
Oh dear, no. No.
Did you guys see that doc about him? I caught it this afternoon when I was half asleep.
What a good partner for you, Mary Kay.
Man, Crafton works that schoolboy charm hard.
True.
But the guy could be a real fucking dick.
Also true.
He'd get nasty and drunk on stage. He went after his best friend's girl. And did people hate him for it? Nah, he rode the horse into hell. He couldn't finish Layla. And Dwayne fucking Allman rode into that hellscape like a white knight, and he's the reason we have bell-bottom blues. Some guys, they inspire that loyalty in people. When it comes to me, well, no one ever bailed me out.
Oh, dear.
Chris wouldn't come by while I was trying to finish the terrible twos.
I scroll down the Wikipedia page, and there it is, the third album, The Terrible Twos. Don't put the word terrible in your title, Phil. It's just too easy for the critics to slaughter you. He analyzes his fizzling career.
A good marriage is a tough thing to write about.
And I revisit one of my favorite interviews with Phil. Nomi was 2 years old. Phil was out of rehab, once again, withdrawing from the
pink cotton wool.
He stole that metaphor from Eric fucking Clapton. Anyway, Phil compared you to his Gibson. You are not an instrument. And said he could stay clean for the rest of his life if he got to play with you every day. The reporter told you what your husband said, and your response was telling.
It's not what you expect when you're a muse, but what can you do?
Spoken like a true, battered, trapped woman. And I read the lyrics from Waterbed, the fourth track on Moan and Groan. I gave you what you want. It's a waterbed. I'm seasick for you. Will you give me head? Why take 'em off if you won't give it up? Why lay down if I'm not enough?
You weren't his muse.
You were his whipping post, and you're ashamed, aren't you? You were young, Mary Kay. I made mistakes too, R.I.P. Candace, but I didn't marry my mistake. I know, I know. You were pregnant, and he wrote his twisted love letters about his fear of commitment when he was young too. But then I turn his show back on, and he's digging deep into the past as always, blasting the pity party dirge he calls Sharp Six.
Ah, you gotta do it, man! You mute her scream with a ring, they command. A hustler, you want it. It's at the newsstand. Summer comes in like a fire, and it goes. And where she went, you don't know. Her body, you want it. But now it's out of reach. The alarm cuts you up. At Sharp Six, you're just another Tom, you're a dick, you're Phil Stick. It's broken. She burnt your wick. You wake up in a crate, and you're dead. She's in a barrel in your bed. A crate in a barrel in a gun. Remember, the summer, the end of all the fun, the barrel of a gun.
Repeat 10 times. The song ends and he cackles.
Man,
he says,
was I some kind of prick or what?
Okay, so he regrets the lyrics, but he still plays the song. A better man, like Eddie Vedder, would bury those hateful, sexist words, but Phil is no Eddie Vedder, and this most hateful album is also the most popular.
Well, Philistines, I gotta drain the lizard.
He's a liar, and he doesn't need to take a piss. He cracks a window, and he smokes a cigarette. I bet that's not allowed. And he stares at the building across the street, and the playlist is a brainwashing exercise.
He plays a go-nowhere Sacrifil B-side between bigger songs by Mudhoney and the Melvins as if we, the listener, are supposed to think Phil and his cronies are in the same league as those legends. As if we, the listener, are that fucking stupid.
Well, he says, Phil's back, and you know, every time I hear Shark, I gotta give a shout-out to my girls at home. You all know that I'm nothing without them. Hell, sometimes I think, what if Emmy never got pregnant? I wouldn't have my daughter or my shark.
He loves you, but you don't love him. When you love someone, you scream it from the rooftops, but you don't even wear a ring, and the meerkat doesn't talk about him either. Your friends don't ask about him. You think leaving him would kill him, push him off the wagon, and you're trapped in this codependent cycle of abuse, and he sighs.
All right, Philistines. Fun fact.
Fact isn't fiction.
First time I played Shark for Kurt, he tucked his hair behind his ear and said he wished he wrote it. I got the chills, man.
Bullshit, you liar. R.I.P. Kurt would never.
Maybe that's why Shark is still burning after all these years. And you gotta forgive me. My moon's blue tonight.
Oh, God.
I know Kurt's a god. You know Kurt's a god. He fell for a Courtney and I fell for my girl and, well, I'm still here. I got another shark in me. You know it. I know it. Peace out, Philistines. And to all my N.A. brothers and sisters, I'll bump into you tomorrow.
He plays Shark at the end of every fucking episode, and I hate that I love this song. In theory, it should suck. Guitars on top of bass, and I forgot about the cowbell, and young Phil wails before cigarettes got the best of his voice, singing at you, at me, at everyone on the planet. You are the shark inside my shark. You're the second set of teeth. The roses ain't in bloom. The thorns hide in the wreath. On my front door you bang and bang. Let me in. Lock me out. You hang me up. I twist. You shout. Eat me. Bite me. Slay me. Spite me. Your body invites me and your fire ignites me. And why are you the flame? The only one to blame. You and your game. You swell and hide, and now you lock me in this frame. Where I can't move, I can't breathe, I just die underneath. 'Cause I'm the shark inside your shark, oh, I'm the second set of teeth. I kill the volume, but I have no choice. I have to finish. I have to sing the rest. You're the shark inside my shark, but I'm the shark inside your shark. You're me, I'm you. What can we do? You're me. I'm you. You gnash, I feed. You and your seed. But do you want me in your dreams? Do you love me when I'm clean? Do you hear me when I... Cowbell. Shark. It's rhyming for dummies, and it's a jumbled mess of mixed metaphors, but he was smart to end it with another displaced cowbell, and I bet you knew that song was going to be big. I look at your legs on his album. You want me to think you stayed for Know Me, but everything looks different now that I know about your rat. You like being a muse. You still wear your signature tights every day, and his music comes from you. Just once I'd like to fall for someone who isn't handicapped by narcissism, but it's too late. I love you. I can't kill his success, but I can pick up my knife. Your rat, he turns out the lights and walks down the stairs, and there he is, 30 feet away on the sidewalk. He leans against the building the same way he does on the cover of his hit single, posing for a camera that isn't there, and he lights a Marlboro Red like he's James fucking Dean, like his imaginary Philistines will summon the courage to emerge from the shadows. He blows smoke rings and watches them fade into the halogen mist, and I don't know how to blow smoke rings. Do you like that, Mary Kay? Are you into that kind of shit? I slip Rachel up my sleeve, and I'm ready, but he pulls a rabbit out of his sleeve. His phone is ringing, and he takes the call, and it's you.
Emmy,
he says.
Babe, you okay? Why are you up?
I let the knife fall out of my sleeve. You're awake. You are listening. I don't call you Emmy, and he says it too many times. Emmy, 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 and he swears that he got a lot of sleep today, lazy fucker, and he tells you that he's going to go right through the sunrise. Oh, fuck you, Phil, before he hits a meeting. He swears he'll pack his own shit for Phoenix, liar, and he chucks his cigarette in a puddle.
I'm down to 2 packs a day, Emmy. And now you want me to quit for a week for your dad? Are you trying to make me fall off the wagon? Is that what you want?
I don't know what you're saying. He doesn't know either because he holds the phone away. But he must be able to hear a little because he takes a deep breath and cuts you off.
Emmy, 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 relax. For the 9 millionth time, it's a show. It's an act. The label likes my attitude and Nomi's friends. They're not up listening to me. Stop caring about what other people think.
I wish I could hear you.
Emmy, Nomi doesn't give a shit if I go to Phoenix, and I told you, I'm going. You win again, babe. What is with you lately? What is it?
Me. It's me.
Christ, woman. I'm missing a whole week of shows, and still you're bitching at me? What the hell more do you want from me?
You might be crying. Or apologizing. He rubs his forehead.
Emmy, baby, come on. Don't do that. You know I love you too.
My blood runs cold. Hot. No. He gets into his jalopy and turns on one of his own unknown songs, and I let go of my knife. Love you too means that you said, I love you. I turn on my car. I blast my Prince, but When You Were Mine can't silence the shark inside my shark. You love him. You do. It's a miserable drive home. A crate in a barrel, a barrel in a gun, and I shove Rachel into the glove compartment. This is worse than R.I.P. Beck and R.I.P. Benji. They didn't have a child in 20 fucking years together. I have to be smart about this. Yeah, I want Phil gone, but the real problem is you, Mary Kay. In your own stunted, adolescent, nurturing, self-destructive, misguided, maternal, codependent way, you really do love your husband. I can run him off the road, but that would be dangerous. It might even make things worse. I need help. Hey, Siri. How do you kill love? But who am I kidding? She doesn't know. No one knows. I have to figure it out myself, alone, while you're in Phoenix carving turkeys and reinforcing your dysfunctional family bonds. I drive to Taco Bell. I can have anything I want, but all I want is you. So, I get one of everything. Happy early fucking Thanksgiving to me. Chapter 10. It's the most horrible time of the year, mid-fucking December, and we're in a rut. As it turns out, you're not just beholden to your husband, you're also responsible for your dad. You were only supposed to be in Phoenix for a week, but the day after Thanksgiving, your father fell down the stairs. The mothball Howie Oaken knows more about your father's health than I do. We have to fix that. And Howie informed me that your dad has an osteochondral lesion, which is Howie speak for a hole in his bone. Being the good daughter that you are, you put your rat and your meerkat on a plane, and you stayed with your dad to help him move into a new house. And I don't begrudge you for helping the old man. I'm not a what about me asshole, but your dad isn't the only one in pain. I have a cardiochondral lesion, Mary Kay. You don't call, you barely text. Time drags and time flies. November already turned into December, and I walk outside to get the paper, and fecal-eyed Nancy is hammering a wreath onto her front door. She doesn't wave, and I don't wave, and when the fuck are you coming home, Mary Kay? I've been so good. I didn't kill Phil. I've processed my feelings about your secret life. I've given you space, and on the rare occasion that you do text me, I don't harp on you about your return. I asked you exactly once, and your response was infuriating.
Soonish, I guess. I think.
Soonish. Adjective. Fucking bullshit, Mary Kay. But I'm just as bad at long-distance relationships. I look at the text I sent you last night. Me. How you doing? I couldn't have done any worse, and I know it. You are not ya, and it's a dorky, broad question, the kind of whining you don't need right now, and I pour rice checks into a bowl. I try to read the paper, but I don't want any more bad fucking news. I go to Love's Instagram. I am acing holiday-induced self-destruction 101, and I watch my son whip his arm with another early prezi, a plastic fucking sword, and this is no good either, so I get up. I put on your favorite black cashmere sweater, and the sweater and I go outside and get into my ice-cold car. Nancy's husband is in his car, too. Warming up the Land Rover for his wife, per usual. I half wave at him and he pretends he doesn't see me. Happy Christmas to you too, asshole. And Nancy swans out of their house. She's on the phone.
Yes, Mom, but we need a fuller tree for our e-card photo.
And I feel like the human equivalent of a fucking e-card destined for an e-trash bin. Nancy gets into her nice warm car, and she loves her husband, and he loves her, maybe, and he's a tool. She's a tool. But they have each other, and you won't even tell me how you're doing. I hit the road and lower the volume on Holly Jolly Christmas, because you haven't called me once since you've been gone. So much for friends. I bet you call your rat husband, and my phone buzzes. Did you read my mind? But no, you didn't. It's just Shortus. He wants to grab a beer again. Crossbores are not impervious to the holiday blues, and I won't waste another night with him. He doesn't know shit about you. He's not your friend, either. And all he really wants to do is bitch about all the presents he has to buy for his girls in the shop. Halfway to the library, I slow down. I am in no rush for my daily disappointment, and I check your Instagram. Nothing. And I proceed to my happy place, which is, oddly enough, your husband's fucking Twitter account. His tweets give me hope, patience. They got me through the first week of your exodus because he spent his time with you whining about being with you. Hey, at SeaTac Airport, if I go postal, it's on you with the Xmas tunes. Peace, hashtag. Thanksgiving is the opposite of rock and roll. Peace, hashtag. Hey, Phoenix, smoking is legal. Deal with it. Peace, hashtag. My sponsor chose the wrong day to lose his cell phone. In-laws, hashtag. Send help, hashtag. The wife let me out of my cage. Check me out at CopperBluesPHX. If you want to hear some real music, I'll sign your tits and your t-shirts, JK, just the shirts, ladies. Whipped, hashtag. Peace, hashtag. Phil is a sad sack, and I have to stay positive, Mary Kay. You were probably happy about the hole in your dad's bone because it meant that you got a break from Phil. He's so transparent. Yeah, he boasted about his show, but the show must have been a total bust because he didn't post a single picture with a single fan, let alone a woman with tits. Even better, your rat appeared in exactly zero of your staged family photos with the meerkat. But that's nothing new. The rat never appears in your photos. Presumably because he has some rule about tarnishing his image, because he wants people to picture young Phil. Say what you will about drugs, but the lifestyle agreed with him, and I get why he's been TBT1997 hashtag ever since he and the meerkat got back from Phoenix.
The man was at his best when he was high as fuck and skinny as a rail, and he's no George Clooney, Mary Kay. He doesn't get better with age. Someone behind me beeps and I wave, "Sorry." And my sweet lord comes on the radio as I pull into the parking lot and halla-fucking-luya. You're here. I wore your favorite sweater. Yes! And I want out of this car and into your orbit so badly that I trip on black ice. Breathe, Joe. Breathe. I don't want to die, not now, before we've christened the red bed. Ho, ho, ho. So I take big, cautious steps, and I enter the library, and you are tan, and your cheeks are fuller than they were a month ago, and I like you like this. Nourished. Bronzed. Here. I wave at you. Totally normal. Welcome back. You raise a hand. Robot stiff. As if I never touched your lemon head. Hi, Joe. Hope you had a good holiday. Dolly's in history, and we're pretty backed up. That's it? That's all I get? Yes. Yes, it is. You're already hiding in your computer, and I follow your orders and plod to history, and I'm worried about you, Mary Kay. Did your rat catch you gazing longingly at the Bruce Springsteen lyrics I posted, the ones you liked, at 2:14 a.m. Phoenix time? I know you can't hug me, but it's me. It's you. Don't you want to know how I'm doing? The day is flying by, and soonish, it's time for lunch, but you eat alone in your office with Whitney and Eddie. I should be in there with you, catching up, reminding you of what it's like to be with me, but I can't push. I have to remember that you've had no privacy for several weeks. You were drowning in dirty dishes and Nomi's anxiety about her college applications. Her first pick is NYU. Thanks, Instagram. And then you were the dutiful daughter. This isn't about me. Right now, you're making up for lost solitude. I take my lunch break in the garden because it's cold, but it's not New York City cold, and finally, here you are, rubbing your shoulders. No jacket. Aren't you freezing? I swallowed the beef in my mouth. Nah, I say. Hey, how was your trip? How's your dad? Now would be a good time for you to tell me about the other dad in your life, but you don't.
My dad's much better, thank you. So that's a relief. And at least we had a nice Thanksgiving before he fell.
Your holiday was not nice, Mary Kay. You and the meerkat looked like marionettes with guns behind your backs in your family photos.
Anyway, you say, as if I'm just another mothball, how about you? Did you have a good holiday?
The worst part about holidays is the way people talk about them when they're over, and you know what I did on Thanksgiving. You saw my pictures. You liked them. I follow you and you follow me, and the rules of Genesis are like the rules of Jinx. I am allowed to call you out. Well, as you saw, it was mostly me and some books, which is to say it was perfect. You look down at your lap.
I told my dad about you.
I put down my fork. You love me. More than you did a month ago. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think I ever spent that much time alone with him. I kept thinking that you two would really get along.
You missed me. And I smile. I'm just glad he's okay. I read about osteochondral lesions. They sound tough. I am such a good fucking guy. I don't make it about me, and you're talking lesions and moving trucks, and I'm here for all of it, and then you touch your hair. You want to make it about me.
You really would like my dad, Joe. He's old school, obsessive about his